Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 2 of the Norton Nails Cricket Club podcast. Today, I've been joined by a true blast from the past. I've been joined by a special guest. You may have heard him mentioned in Friday night's podcast by Ben. He is instrumental in the period of Norton and Nails prominency back in the early 2000s. He recently made a return to local league cricket with Sandyford and Kidsgrove, and we're hoping to welcome him back to Bearstone Road this year. I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Darren Long. Good evening, Darren.
Good evening, Simon. Hope
you're well. I'm very well, mate. I'm very well. It was very good to speak to you just in preamble for the pod. It's great to see you doing well. Great to see that your new venture is going well. Obviously, I believe one of your clients, Daniel Wyatt, did well in the World Cup T20 finals tonight, I believe it was.
Yes, he had a great game, he had a good tournament, he top scored for England. Unfortunately, we fell quite a little bit short in the end, but it was a good tournament, and great for Daniel. She's enjoyed that.
Good, local cricket on the prominence, it's always good to hear. We'll come back to that a little later and find out a little bit about what your venture is and sort of what's important and what's the next stage for you. So the main reason why I invited you onto the podcast is if I was to ask anybody, give me one of the key players that or key characters that came out of Norton and Nails in the last sort of 20 years, you probably want to be those sort of ingrained in that. And it was really to sort of get your views really on sort of, I suppose, local cricket as a whole, past, present and future, and get a feel of what Norton and Nails was like. Because you yourself are not from the village yourself. A bit like myself, obviously you get thrust into it and you realise the characters, and it is a little bit different than sort of everywhere else in the league, but just to kind of get your idea and your feel of it really. So what was your first introduction to sort of Norton and Hales? What year, when, what sort of time period are we talking? I mean, and it just kind of goes into that, doesn't it, really? I think it was a real... that time period, I think, for a lot of clubs... I mean, I grew up and was born and bred at Launceston. There was always kind of the old North Staff South Cheshire League had always kind of had a bit of a sort of a distance from the North Staff and District League, obviously the Senior A, Senior B. And then when the old ECB pyramid system came in, I remember... I mean, I'd done, in 1999, I did literally three quarters of a season at Hemheath, and that was my first real sort of thrust. I'd had sort of 5 or 6 years of everybody saying the standard of sort of teams in Senior A, Senior B weren't great, but I'd done a season sort of 1999 at Hemheath, and that was, you started realising there was actually some decent teams in there. That was my first year. I played against Andy Kemby at Norton and Hales. You first introduction to sort of... Glyn Moore, Mick Moore at Silverdale, and you started seeing some real characters floating around the game, and it was a real interesting period of time, because there was a lot of, I suppose, the old guard from Div 1 sort of realised, oh, we need to up our ante, where all the teams that were ready to push out of Senior A were really sort of willing to push forward, really. So I imagine there was quite a lot of unknown and sort of unsettling times for a lot of clubs, really, and I think you've kind of seen that now, sort of 15 years down the line, where that's sort of nestled, really, in terms of the hierarchy. I mean, you mentioned obviously the challenge there. What was the atmosphere? What was your sort of first impressions? Because as we were talking in the preamble, there's, from the outside looking in, I mean, I always joke, I mean, obviously I'm a Blurton boy through and through, and I now sort of play out at Norton and Hales. Like, the joke always be Norton in Wales, because everybody assumes it's absolutely miles and miles away. It's actually sort of 12 miles as the crow flies. I mean, what was your first impressions walking through the door at the club? What was the sort of the key characters that are like, oh, hello? Or kind of what was different than the time period you sort of say it had at Allsager and Sandyford, and I think Barlston before that, was Barlston after, I'm not sure.
Yeah, Barlston. I mean, I've been at Nipers League, we won the league with Nipers League sort of quite a few years prior to that, 95. I think, I mean, you made some interesting points there. I mean, I think there was always certainly quite a bit of snobbishness about the North Star side of the Tessa League against the District League. And I think the pyramid was the best thing that happened to the league. And if it hadn't, then Norton Hales wouldn't have been able to do what they did.
No, exactly.
So I think the pyramid system was great. Senior A, for me, was probably a tougher league than Division 1 of the North Stack type of Cheshire League, because you had got a lot of teams of good players and good spirit and good fight in them. The big thing I found in Division 1 was, I think a lot of teams were quite mentally weak. I think too many of them had stood around not being able to get relegated for the past, whatever it was, 30 years, 40 years.
Yeah.
And I just think there's been a lot of soft cricket that had gone on in Division 1.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, you know, Norton Hales were sort of one of the trailblazers that you had these Wood Lane, these teams sort of followed them, and obviously had done exceptionally well. Just flew through the league straight away, pretty much. Mia Heath were one back in the time as well. Coming to Norton Hales, it was interesting, I suppose. I mean, I seem to remember my first game, and the season nearly got suspended because of foot and mouth disease. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I remember that quite, because I was saying, 2000, what, we're talking 2003, so 2001, yeah, so 2001, that was the first year I signed as professional at Wedgwood, and I remember we had to play our first 7 games away from home because of the farms in and around sort of like the Barston area. Yeah, I remember it really well, yeah.
So Norton Hales had obviously been prime in the middle of the foot and mouth stuff as well, but the season went ahead, and I remember if you let him go and get the Julian Field, get a ball, you had to put your feet in that end. And some sort of whitewash. So not the most professional start. The ground, I don't know what it's like now with wicket, it wasn't great back then. And if it rained, it was a bit like a pudding. And I just remember when we started off, I always remember Kevin Evans, who was a pro. I remember he sat us down and sort of, you know, he was like, you know, what he expected of everyone. And we hadn't got the most professional team in the world back then, as I said to you before we started. And I just remember thinking, I think, to be fair, I think most of the guys looked at Kevin as if he was an alien from outer space. and he probably, he's been a good one, because I really wonder what he thought he'd come to. You know, I mean, I'd grown up at Sandyford at the end of the day, so it wasn't a million miles apart. But, it was just, we got the old ramshackle clubhouse, but it's just a really good set of lads, everyone very welcoming, but what they had got, they just got just incredible, I don't know if spirit's a word, but the toughness about them. You know, they knew how to get a job done, they knew how to battle, very, very mentally tough group. It just seemed to know how to get the job done. And I remember we started off in Division 1, no one really knew what was going to happen. But we just ground a lot of results out early on. On bad wickets, you know, on the games, you know, I think we were getting teams out for 60 and knocking off for 7 and stuff like this. But we just kept winning, and I think a few teams got rained off, and we seemed to be about 40, 50 points ahead after about a month. So it was, you know, you were just straight into really enjoying it.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing. Just going back to your point there, I mean, in terms of how the wicket is at the minute, I would say it's inconsistent. It's one of those squares that make it flatters the disease. So if you turn up and it looks like an absolute shirt front, you know you're in for an absolute torrid afternoon. Whereas you turn up and it looks like a green seamer, you know, 250, 260, 270 isn't safe. And it is one of them. It can get really, really flat. It's just, you know, having probably not had the care and attention it should have had for the last 10 or 15 years, at all times. You know, the way that the guys are galvanising at the minute, you know, it was a lot better last year. Nowhere near where I know a lot of people would like it to be. I've been shoved up at the top of the order opening. I would definitely like it to be a little bit more consistent. You know, you got pros running in from the top end, banging it in halfway down. You don't know whether you want to duck, stand there and phase it or try and hook it out the ground. But more often than not, it's going to bowl you.
Yeah, it was just dead low. You could face sort of Curly Ambrose in his end game. He wouldn't scare you when we were playing on there because he wouldn't get bust on tight.
Yeah.
He's just got to learn to go front foot forward, mm-hmm. drive through. If you didn't do that, you're probably not going to last very long, to be honest.
Yeah, very similar to Allsage, I found in that respect. The first year I went to Allsage, I found it really difficult, having sort of being brought up at Longton, coming back from a season playing in the Prem at Leek. It was really difficult teaching everything. You know, everybody learned how to play at Clayton, and literally Johnny Trundler could run in and rip your head off at Clayton. So it was very much a case of learning everything against your instincts, just a real sort of want to walk forward at stuff, really. Yeah.
Alan too, right? He wouldn't have helmets on, and people like Kevin Darlington, you know, it's rapid bowlers bowling for Haslington, and Alan would just be walking forward, charging him, yeah. And would score runs again, you know, and get your vital 25-30 in low scoring games. But that was the way you had to do it. And it wasn't just Nut Nails, but to be fair, it was just one of those seasons. I think the second game we played, we drew back. We went Newcastle North Hill, and we were all out for 80. And all the overs were bowled in the game, but we drew. We finished something like 70 odd for 8, which tells you something about what. It was just a really bad year. It wasn't as if, like, you know, that's how it was every year, generally, but it just seemed to be wet year, or certainly to start with anyway.
Well, you mentioned that year. I mean, I was very, very young at the time when all that was happening. I was probably 18, 19 at the time. And I think the big thing that I picked up at the time about that was as you grow, as a kid, you kind of, you know, you almost walk whimsically around. You see the first team practicing, then you see like the committee members and the mums and dads. When you start becoming like a young adult and you start understanding responsibility and how much time, effort and resilience and I suppose pure sacrifice that club members put into it, seeing clubs put that season together, because that wouldn't have happened, had that have happened in, I mean, I think I remember back certain parts of the country were completely white off for the season, and it was only the local mentality, like say in Norton Ailes particularly, they are very mentally strong, is I thought it was the local will for the game that really sort of pushed that forward at that time. And I think, you know, I don't think a lot of people got, or the people that should have done it, I don't think they got the praise that they should have done, because there was a lot of work that went on behind the scenes, and there was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of characters in the game that carry quite a bit of ego. And I remember thinking back, we're walking around going, you know, what are these shit tips we're playing on? But, you know, we were all lucky that we all got a pretty much a full season in, really.
Yeah, no, very much so. And Norton Ailes was, again, one of those clubs where everyone just chipped in. You know, I remember me and Rowles, you know, painting the old wooden pavilion and sticking the green paint on it, and you know, you turn up and all the players were, you know, it wasn't a massive club membership. Mm-hmm. There was some, you know, people obviously done a lot of work in the club. But yeah, you turn up and the players were all turning up and doing it as well. And you can't kind of put a, you know, you can't sort of say how important that is really, but when it just builds the team spirit, a camaraderie that goes that bit further than just on the pitch, I think.
Well, yeah, I think that, like I say, it's a really important point. It's very similar to how the club is now, really. I mean, it's quite resurgent at the moment in terms of we've got a very small nucleus of a committee, but it's very much a case of there's a vision of where they want to be. They don't want to be, as much as they would all love to be the Tractor Boys for a day, there isn't this mentality where they want to carry forward the sort of mentality and the, I suppose, the perception of what it is. Obviously, they've got a brand new clubhouse, you know, which is amazing. They're trying to do a lot of work on the square, and behind the scenes a lot of work going on. And but at the same time, they don't want to lose that character, because the people driving that are the people like Martin Rowley, the Furnival family per se, and whatever disguise or generation that is, it's still there, and that sort of ingrained nature. And obviously the time period we're going to talk about now, when we were sat down at the AGM recently, I think was one of the big deciding factors. It gave them a taste of something that they wanted to continue, really, but doing it in a new way, should I say.
Yeah.
So, obviously, Div 1, so we're going to it, obviously, the foot and mouth, that sort of stuff, as you go through the season. What did you, say you finished top of Div 1 that year, 2001?
Yeah, again, I mean, I don't know, I've got vivid memories of it, really. I remember we got, I remember we'd gone to, we went to Stone, we were about 2 games ago, and we got a draw there. That guy was promoted, because I remember that was the night that England beat Germany, 5-1, or whatever it was in Germany. So that was a pretty special night. Remember, week after, we got Meerheath at home, we won that, we won the title, so the title's wrapped up, we've got a week to go. And then, I can't remember the last game, but the last game was, you know, we'd done it, it was done, we were clear. We'd been, you know, best part of 50-odd points clear, I think. So, we just never fault, really, from start to finish. We just got on a run. Don't remember us getting many bad results at all. If we did, we just bounced back from it straight away. We just walked it, basically.
Yeah, good start. And then, so Div 1, you're approaching the Premier League season. What was the mentality behind the scenes to sort of approach that then? Because there was obviously a big shift in sort of 2001 that year, 2002. What was the sort of makeup and thought process going into the Prem? That's the key thing. I mean, you look at you pulled a team there, and I think as we mentioned before, we did the podcast on Friday, and speaking to Ben, one of his resounding things just being on the sort of cusp, and I think he played a couple of games that year, was just how many strong-minded characters as a unit you were, which kind of, I mean, I'm trying to think back. You mentioned the Longton game now. I'm trying to think. Who would have been pro at that time? Would Stephen Tweedy would have been there? Andrew Tweedy, Tweedy would have been there overseas. Stephen Tweedy was centre half. I don't know why I'm saying that. Andrew Tweedy, South African. And then you got Wompath, Gaz Morris, Mickey Longmore.
Yeah, Ned Davies would be there.
Wayne Morris still just at that. Just hang on.
Yeah. We went on and won about three league titles after that, I think. So, yeah, they were certainly our main sort of rivals as it transpired as the season went on.
Good. And then, obviously going through, I mean, you mentioned Imran there. What I think we touched on it just before we came and started recording was in terms of, you look back, wherever Imran went, obviously, the first, I think Kidsgrove was his first local club. He turned up as a very young, ripe teenager. And then you look at sort of everything else he pretty much touched, especially at the local level, obviously the time he had at Modishull and the time he had at Norton. It just seemed to have a little bit of X factor, especially local level. I mean, you look at the big names that have floated around local cricket. What do you think set him apart from, you know, I think at the same time period you're there, you've got people like Otis Gibson, Vasper Drakes were in the same in the division and the league at the similar sort of time. What set Emmy apart, do you feel, is it?
Emmy, he had 2 years at Kidsgrove where he'd done well. I don't think he'd ripped up trees as such, because I don't think they'd got near getting promoted out of Division 1
no.
With him. So it wasn't, people go, he got it in round, that's why he won the league.
Mm-hmm.
He was obviously been a big factor, but you would expect any overseas pro to be a big factor if your team mm-hmm. won the Premier League.
Yeah.
I think that he was a bit of just a cheap shot from people when they used to say that.
Yes.
Yeah. Imran was brilliant for Norton and Ailes. Mm-hmm. Norton and Ailes were brilliant for Imran.
Yeah.
I honestly think if it weren't for Norton and Ailes, Imran's here quite possibly wouldn't be where he is today.
Yeah.
Because we did start putting his name on the map. He played for Middlesex when he was at Norton and Hales. So, it was a relationship which was fantastic for everybody. What probably put him apart from some of the other pros was massive desire.
Mm-hmm.
You knew Imran was fighting his heart out for you every ball. He was a sensational fielder. He just wanted ball and ball and ball. His batting was hit and miss, to say the least, but it could be useful at times. He could, hit a few sixes for you here or there. And everyone loved him, basically. He brought into the Tractor Boys ethos. He went out with us. He was fantastic. But, as I say, the club were equally as fantastic for him.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great fielding team. We set good fields. We often had talk to him and helped him with his bowling and where he was putting the ball. And he would listen, but he'd often get a little bit too, if he couldn't get wickets, he'd start trying to bowl quicker and quicker and quicker, and you sort of have to calm him down sometimes. Or he'd try bowling too many varieties. As I said, we set good fields. There's not many places people could score runs against him because he was accurate.
Yeah.
And you got Andy Kenby, at the other end, who was, again, hardly bowling a bad ball. And we were going through overrates at like 21, 22 an hour. They were both coming out for a few yards.
Yeah.
And the fielding, I think how we managed him, Andy Kenby's bowling, Beckett's bowling when he was opening up, it was just building pressure. And that, if you've got someone who's not that great bowler at the other end, Imran Tahir becomes a much less effective bowler. Because people think, well, I can just play him back, or, I can see him out to some extent. He's still obviously going to get wickets.
Mm-hmm.
But when we can't get runs from either end, you've got to do something against Imran as well.
Yeah.
So it was, as I say, we were equally, the club were equally good for Imran, yeah. But he got a great desire.
No, good. And I was trying to work out. I mean, probably a bit of lack of research here. How old would Imran have been at that time? Talking. Yeah, yeah. So, like I say, a really important period in his career, wasn't it? Obviously, if you're looking at any sort of aspiring cricketer, that sort of way you're looking to make a mark, especially in a different country, on foreign soil, trying to do it a different way, really. And like I say, to get a gig for Middlesex in the same season, what, third season in the UK, that's a, you know, it's a massive achievement.
I think that might have been the year after. To be no, right, okay. Definitely the year after.
Right, okay. Yeah, no Clarkie, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think he held the record, but he'd done it in like a 26 game season and not 22.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was undisputed, record wicket taker in the league, basically.
No, cool. Excellent. I mean, it's just one of those things. And then, obviously the Premier League winning season, what was your sort of memories of sort of what went on sort of after that, really? I know it was quite political, Ed, so we won't sort of touch on it. After the dismantling of it, really, I mean, everybody sort of, from the outside looking at it, seemed that everybody had left, obviously, because the club had dropped down a couple of divisions for not having enough junior teams, obviously the administration. What was it like from the outside looking in, from an Orton Ailes point of view at that point?
Mm-hmm. Up to the points required.
Yeah.
It was a battle. It's a massive battle. Sometimes it's more of a battle than it was on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was, then a rule came in that, you know, you had to have so many junior teams, which mm-hmm. you can imagine in a village the size of Norton and Ailes, and probably at that time the average age was about 120 in Norton and Ailes village as well.
Yeah.
Still not far off
that.
It was just, you couldn't do it then. I mean, to be honest, I think, if you ask anyone from that period, you always felt like an unwanted guest at the top table.
Yeah.
With Norton and Ailes and the Premier League.
Yeah.
Some people were great, some people loved it, you know, the fact that this, you know, I suppose like Leicester City type thing had come out, where we just made it an amazing achievement. And some people didn't like it, because
You're not going to please everybody, are you? It's just one of those things. And as we said, it was such an important period in time for local cricket as well. There'd been such massive change, and a lot of the people had a lot of say and a lot of influence, essentially had their position disjointed, really. And I think, you know,
Chesley came into existence because, you know, a certain set of clubs didn't want relegation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how it happened. Now, to my mind, that can be right, I'll never know. But that it was brought about through pure greed, basically, where people just wanted to go, yeah, we're going to be in the top league, and no matter how bad we do, that can't be changed. You know, probably a bit like football's going with some teams now, but. So that was its sort of ethos, what it was born of. And then all of a sudden it got forced up on the league to be opened. And then very rapidly after that, Norton Ailes do what we did, and say other clubs after. So it's going to ruffle feathers, and it did ruffle feathers, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, we were, for the year after, I think we come third, we were going for the title again.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just sort of spotted out a scheme at the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think when it got announced that they were getting relegated, the relegation was obviously bad enough. I think the problem was more or less, even if you win it, you're not going to go back up.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much the destruct button.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, I'm not being funny, but from my point of view, I don't want to play somewhere else. I'll leave if you win the league by a million points, you're not going to get promoted. And everyone pretty much felt the same. So, unfortunately, unfounded.
Yeah, well, it goes back to your original point, wasn't it? The reason you joined the club was for a challenge, and the moment somebody says to you, right, yeah, you're going to play, but you can't go up or whatever, you remove all element of challenge. I mean, we spoke about Ulstage before. I was captain at the club when the EGM happened to move away from the Cheshire League, and that season, when I look back on it, it was almost like a poison chalice, really, because everybody knew we were leaving. There was nothing really to play for. We'd had 9 players from the season before. We finished, I think, top 3 in the Cheshire Division 1. And everybody had just sort of had enough of travelling over to, you know, the Wirral 3 times in a season and not getting back to 11:30 and things like that. And that was kind of the reason that we decided to move. And it was a difficult season to be in. And, you know, I think, you know, if Norton was anything like that at that time, I imagine it would have been a very difficult place to be around. And understandably, you know, it's a leisure time for a lot of people, isn't it? And if that's not the way things are going to be, you know, if you're not enjoying it, then you're not going to be there.
Right? Semi-final, I think we narrowly lost in that. We'd ended up third, but after leading for quite a bit of a season again, so it wasn't terrible. But yeah, you did get this feeling, and then you saw your image rumours that the club's going to, you know, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So it was an enjoyable season. To me, 3 fantastic seasons. You know, yeah. I wouldn't change them for anything. I love being Norton and Ailes, love the club. You know, I still always look out for the results now, and I'm over the moon, you know, what you boys have done for getting them back where they're going. And so, but no, it was 3 great seasons. There was no real, it didn't sort of peter out, it just went dramatically, you know. As I say, it was almost like, right, you're going to get relegated,
your hand was full, sort of thing.
None of it was difficult up until that point. And as I say, we've been constantly fighting one thing or another, so yeah. it wasn't like a massive shock.
Yeah.
You know, it just felt like you could see it coming, I suppose, and eventually it did.
Well, I suppose that's what happens when the prominency comes so fast. You know, I think, you know, from an infrastructure point of view, I think, you know, the village is growing massively at the moment, and also, you know, the links that we're building up with the local town, which is Market Drayton, is you know, increasing quite massively. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we're trying to do at the moment in terms of the resurgence, is make sure that the infrastructure that we have is there, you know, from the social side to everything else, but making sure that I suppose that mental toughness that you've mentioned on a couple of occasions is still there, really, because without that there, we wouldn't be who we want to be, really. So
We didn't have the infrastructure, to be fair, Simon.
Yeah.
You know, it was, as I say, it was a village club which had grown at an unbelievable rate on the pitch, which couldn't be kept up with off the pitch. It was as simple as that, really. So, you know, I mean, if you've got what you've got now with the team we had, you'd probably have a perfect scenario.
Yeah, exactly.
But we hadn't got the infrastructure there.
It's understandable. I mean, like I said, it was kind of, I suppose, the thing that allowed the success was ultimately the thing that caused it, really, in terms of, you know, the ECB forcing the league's hand to open it up allowed that, you know, that very steep sort of upward curve, but at the same time, without having the same time to embed that sort of level of infrastructure that the ECB and the league ultimately demanded to sit at that top table, really. And I suppose it was a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, really, and it was a bit difficult. So, yeah, I suppose it wasn't a great time all around, really. So that was Darren Long back in the early 2000s. And I know I've sort of bumped into you in a fair few times since. What's Longy's sort of cricketing sort of involvements at the moment? Obviously, you were at Kidsgrove last year, I believe.
Yeah, I sort of, you know, had a few retirements. I suppose I kind of finished in 2008, really, and then I had 2009 off, no real intention of playing again. I went back to Sandyford, I just watched them, and they sort of said, look, would you captain us, you know, as though, disrespect you, score any runs, whatever, just simply captain us.
Mm-hmm.
And we went straight with Premier League first year, it was on League Quentin. Unfortunately, by that time I'd had a knee operation. The first game I started with Sandy Flint, my knee went again, I had another knee operation. And then I sort of hobbled through, and then the season of Premier League, about 4 or 5 games, my other knee went, so I had another knee operation. So I basically finished about halfway through then. Mm-hmm. A couple of years after that, I did a bit of captaincy for Sandy for the second team, helping out with young ones really. I stopped playing again, and then Kidsgrove asked me about whether I wanted to come back and I'd be interested in helping them run their setup this year. Mm-hmm. Knew a few of the guys down there from, obviously, there's quite a few of the ex-Sandyford lads down there. Mm-hmm. So I spoke to the family, see what they thought, and they were go for it if you fancied. And it's Division 3, so not obviously not the standards where we were brought the nails back in the day, but mm-hmm. It's good, I enjoyed it. We got promoted on the last day of the season. That was good, but the eyes are going and everything else, so from a personal point of view it's a lot more difficult now.
Brilliant. And what's your sort of aspirations for the season ahead? Obviously you'll be on a return to Bearstone Road this year.
Just go and enjoy it really. Yeah, I enjoyed it this year. Was good. I think all the teams we played against, we got on well with. Just go and enjoy it and try it best. That's probably always been my motto. Put everything you've got, leave it on the pitch, and that's what Norton Ailes did again. You come off and you knew if you've lost, well, that's as much as we could do. Mm-hmm. I think there was a different mentality probably with today's player than there was back then. But my sort of days are well behind me really, in terms of, say, being a player. But there's not really any pressure, just got to enjoy it.
Yeah, good. It's pretty similar to myself, really. It's kind of, I packed in properly probably 4 or 5 years ago, just completely fell out of love with the game, really. Just, I think, as you grow up, those are the priorities and different things. Because if anybody remembers me back in the day, I was probably a bit too outspoken, a bit too overzealous, and probably my enthusiasm massively outweighed my ability. But I think it was very much a case of, for me, looking now, just enjoyed it. I think last year was the first time that I just went and enjoyed it, and it's, just don't say boo to a goose, just get on with it. And I think just raising your point there in terms of just the mentality of the cricketers. I mean, I very much had I'm going to chat with Philip White, actually. You know Whitey, the umpire that kept at Bagnell for the years?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we were talking about how, like, there's no lack of sort of characters. You go back sort of 15, 20 years, like, how many like genuine characters there were in the game. And yeah, I know obviously the game's moved on and there's the rights and the wrongs that you can and can't do, but it just seems to be, and don't get me wrong, there was plenty of characters back in the day that probably played more than they should have done, but I don't know if it's like a mentality shift or just a general sort of reflection of sort of society and the type of people that are playing the game. It just seems to be a lack of genuine characters nowadays, or maybe that's just me being old, I don't know, it's just one of those things. I mean, in terms of yourself now, in terms of local cricket, you touched on it there. Where do you see, what's the biggest change in local game that you've seen over the last sort of 10 or 15 years? I mean, we said before that I think the administration did a great job. They have laws and stuff passed down to them, and there have been well documented issues this year. But in terms of general, what's your general feel in terms of local cricket after 10, 15 years after the league went open?
I don't want to sound like one of those old moaning gits and say it was better in my day and all that. I think it probably was better, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. From when I played what I grew up with, you pretty much committed your weekend. You were training Friday night, up Saturday morning, and I'd be out there batting ball against the wall or something, the morning for a game. I was tuned in for the game from the minute I got up. You get to the ground, you play, you then drink, and then you often sense in repeating it again Sunday and you go work on Monday, you know, generally happy with life. I think that I don't think the commitment seems anything like it was. But, you know, there's reasons for that. There's no, you know, again, went back to, you know, when I was at Nigersley, for instance, you know, there was no internet or anything like that. It was, you know, just, I just think there was a lot, much more vibrant community around cricket and after, you know, after the games particularly. You'd always stay behind, and, you know, if you didn't have a few pints, and, you know, back then it was seen as very odd. But I just think basically I just don't think there's quite the commitment there, generally speaking, all round. Because people got other things to do, you know, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it just feels like something's been lost a little bit from the game.
I think, just going back to what we're saying in terms of carrots, I think it's just more representative of society. Again, not that it's a right or a wrong thing. I mean, you look at how, you know, the cricket's always been, you know, an all-day event. You look at Test match cricket and how many young cricketers are wanting to be brought up on the shorter form of the game due to, that's just the dynamics of life. They want things quicker, faster now, and due to the internet they can get them. And I think, you know, you speak to a lot of kids that, you know, there's a massive thriving junior section across the area, but it just seems to be that there doesn't seem to be that conversion from sort of being a teenager into adulthood due to work commitments and different things like that. And I think it's the pool of players that clubs seem to be pulling from seems to be smaller, which, you know, is a difficult thing.
Sort of once you leave junior cricket up to like mid 20s, I think you're losing a lot of them for whatever reason. You know, probably a lot of social reasons, say sort of the internet age, and you know, whether it's attention spans, I don't know, there's a lot. And I think the funny thing I found when I played this year, you know, when we played a team who got a couple of 40-year-olds who I'd know well, they'd be the ones I'd be panicking about. You know, thinking, oh, yeah, he's really gone, he'll do this, he'll get stuck in.
Yeah.
They're the ones you tended to worry about more than the guys at the peaks of a career, if that makes sense. But,
there's
some good players out there, and, you know, the facilities, generally speaking, are better than they've ever been, and there's a lot of good things going on. But yeah, it's different times, isn't it? It's not that one's better than the other. It's just life, I guess.
Well, exactly. You're competing against the best, aren't you? It doesn't matter when it is. You're competing against the best of that particular era. You talk about football, people moan about what the Premier League is now or what it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, and the characters and different things. You can't mix it. Same as people moan, you know, is Test match cricket as good or as bad as it was sort of back in the day? And it's, you can only play against what's in front of you, really. And I think that's sort of where you just have to sort of place that and move forward. But like I say, I think, you know, you've got to look at the standards and the facilities. And, you know, it's very rare now you go to a club where there's not decent bar facilities or decent changing room facilities. I go back to the day when I remember turning up for my second week proing for Wedgwood, turning up at Onaly, and I walked into the clubhouse and my foot went straight through the floor, and it took me 5 minutes to work out how to get my foot through it and various different things. And I think that's, from that point of view, is obviously much better than it used to be. You mentioned you played in Div 3 last year, and you mentioned it was some of the older characters that you sort of had a bit of a fear factor, a little bit of aura around them. Are you going to sort of, you know, give somebody a bit of shining light in their 40s that had the infamous Darren Long running for the hills? Which sort of characters are you talking about there?
Yeah, I mean, I say the, I mean,
I know, yeah, yeah.
Like Phil Cheadle's turning out for Stone.
Yeah.
Steve Aston played for
Sash, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sash is now well in his 50s.
Yeah.
There was Sean Bowers, you know, been cracking. Steady. I think he's retired now.
Still wobbling it around.
Scott Oliver was there, you know. And these are sort of, I say, you're thinking, oh, I'm going to struggle getting these guys out, you know, because they know the game. And again, they're tough characters.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I remember Steve Askin was probably going to thank me for telling this, but there was, I did chat to him after the game about it. And he was keeping, I was like, oh, you know, real quality player, top, you know, real good player, like, and he's, he's above his standard. And about two overs in, a guy was bowling very military medium. One of our players snicked it straight through, absolute sitter, and Sass dropped it. And all our lads were like, bloody hell, you said he was.
Yeah.
I was telling Sass, he's like, man, I'm well in my 50s now. And I was like, yeah, no, fair play. But so perhaps I'll give you a bit more credit than me due. But no, I just think when, those sort of guys, the competitors, the good players, and it's nice. Gavin Connor was another one who was playing for Czech with seconds. And I just think that it's a pleasure to see them guys, really. First thing I do is go
proper characters,
see them and say hello and make sure we catch up after the game as well. So that for me was one of the highlights. So as much as I say, we sort of, you see them being in the team, it's also really nice just to see that sort of character around and playing. Everyone's got a bit of a smile on the face where probably 20 years ago we were growling at each other and abusing each other.
But I think that's the thing. I always talk about this with cricket people. So why do you get involved? And once you come away from it, you don't realise just how sociable the game is. Because with football, you might spend an hour and a half, 90 minutes, and you have a little bit of interaction. With cricket, you spend a full day with these people, with, in many cases, their wives, girlfriends, all that sort of stuff. So the cricketing community, I mean, there's obviously factions in it, but as a whole, it's a great sort of social scene, really, and sort of social thing. I think about the amount of people that I've either done business with or I have friends and things like that. Most of that have come through some form of cricketing connection over the years, and I think it's really nice to see, like say, even sort of over a 20-year career, you can still have that sort of catch up and reminisce, really. And that's ultimately why we play cricket, or why we spend any leisure time, is to smile and sort of have a smile on your face, really.
Yeah.
I'm definitely racking up in there myself at the minute. Right, okay. So final quick fire questions. We asked Ben these the other night, so it's just 7 questions. So first one is best international pro you've ever played against. And it could be for varying different reasons. It doesn't have to be on paper, but just one that, maybe you had the wood on you, or just one that you kind of got your heart beating a bit more.
He's been run, obviously, so he'd certainly be up there.
Yeah.
I remember Australia against Japan, and it was the best bloke in the world, but Cameron Coffey, who played for Little Stoke.
Yeah, I remember him, yeah.
He was a decent quick bowler. Another one, Barrington Brown, of course. Absolute class. He has played for West Indies and all the amongst others.
Yeah.
I'd sort of say Barrington Brown, Imran, really.
Yeah, okay. And then I don't even need to ask you. Well, I will, just for courtesy. Best one you played with?
Yeah, internationally, Imran. I played with some good ones, people like Shabir Ahmed. It was a player I'd put on a level with Imran who never played any international cricket. It was Sanjay Gill at Boston.
Yeah, Gilly, yeah.
He broke when he was at Bolton, he broke the Division 1 record. He got 125, 126 wickets.
Yeah.
Now, as a pace bowler, that's incredible, because he can't stand there bowling all day from one end. And he must have bowled about 10 people off, no balls.
Yeah.
How he never played international cricket is beyond me. And I honestly couldn't separate him and Imran.
Yeah.
If I had to go for one, I'd possibly put Sanjay. Slightly, but they were just two fantastic players. But so not as clean cut that answer as
that's what it was going to be. Okay, cool, good. Well, on Gilly, I remember speaking to Phil Taylor. I know Phil quite well, he was my PE teacher back at school days. He was telling me about Gilly. You'd basically be able to bowl sort of some of the best bouncers, but equally bowl Yorkers at will, like right on the money. If you needed to, you just mop up a tail like it wasn't, didn't even exist.
He could do it for me. I mean, he could bowl in swingers, out swingers, copied, and he'd pretty much tell you what he was going to do. And like you say, he'd hit someone on the head, he'd bowl a great Yorker. Imran took managing. I'd like to think, my entire life. But just got this, he's got a cricket brain knowledge about him. And sometimes I'd say to Sanjay, you know, Sanjay, we're going to do this, this, this. And, no, captain, no, captain, you do this. And to start with, I'd be like, no, no, so I know best. You do what I say, I know. I'll captain him around here, mate. You just... pretty much every time, whatever he told me, he was proved right. And in the end, he'd look at me, hands on hips. Oh, captain, you do it again. And I'd be like, listen, Sanj, you're right. You just, and I'd literally just, like, to him, I'd just go, you, if you want seven slips, you have seven slips. If you want four men to play on. And I remember we played Ennis in the cup, and it got reduced to about a 30 over game. And we did about 150. And there you go, we saved Sanjay's overs, so he'd be able to have, what, six overs each.
Yeah.
So we saved him to, like, you know, 18 overs gone. And he hadn't lost many wickets, but they hadn't got a lot of runs. I was thinking, you're just not going to have a prayer against Sanjay on a wet track here.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, let's say they were, you know, sort of 50 to 2 or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
And Sanjay would go, right, two helmet men. I'm like, he said, did you have a cup game? So I've done 12 overs, go. Two helmet men. Yeah, all right, two helmet men. Four slips. Four slips, two helmet men. Are you serious? Cup game. Captain, you know, yeah, I'm going to be everyone here. I thought, get your helmets, get you. Then he got 5 for 10. He was just, he was just sensational, you know. He was, I mean, just such a fun character as well to play with, but... The great shame of Sanjay, he got an ankle injury when they went into the Premier League, and he was good, but he just lost, he lost some zip, and I don't think he ever really recovered, because he never, I think people were saying, yeah, Division 1 and Premier League, different standard, that's why he's not done so well. It was nothing to do with that, because we just said Imran didn't, you know, he did well, he didn't do incredibly well in Division 1, yet he ripped the Premier League up, so I don't buy into that. Sanjay Gill would have torn the Premier League apart. He was international class right now.
Yeah. Cool, good. Much better answer than I thought there. Very insightful. Okay, Ben Shirts this one. So I expect a better response from yourself. Ben Shirts it. Obviously, the league's been open for a while now. So, best non-overseas paid cricketer you played against?
Local lad, basically.
Doesn't necessarily have to be. You obviously, there's people that travel in from all over the place. Just people that you played against.
I mean, I've not played at any over the last 10 years. I've not really played at any great level. I might in that respect, I suppose. But a lot of good players, likes of Rich Harvey's obviously done very well, scored a lot of runs. Like Andy Clark, who we mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Oddest cricketers you'd ever come across, really.
Oddest cricketers? One of the oddest blokes you'll ever meet. He was definitely a character. You talk about characters in league, Andy Clark. Being a 16, 17, 18-year-old lad at Longton with Andy Clark walking around the place, that was definitely a character, definitely an influence, should I say. Not if it was a good or a bad one, but yeah, Clark, he was a definitely different one.
So it was a hell of a lot. I'm going to share it purely because I probably need more time to think about it, to be honest, mate. But I'm shaking it.
Okay. All right. Best. Okay. I won't ask you the one you played with because that'll probably sound a bit more difficult. Actually, I'll ask you best. Just general local league cricketer you ever played against. One that you could actually hear. You know, you were talking about before about characters, people who, not fear, but you knew you were in for a battle for. You knew could impact a game that could actually, you know. Characters. There's a lot of very, very good cricketers, but you just every now and again see two or three that will affect games on more than a regular basis, whether it be caught scoring runs, taking wickets at will, sort of.
Are you talking local?
Local lad, yeah.
Yeah, again, you're making me cast my memory back quite a way here. I think against, yeah, I mean, like, Tony Dalton was obviously a very good one. You're going to have a battle.
Still? You've played against him twice this year. He's still fearsome. He's still in your face. Dots, yeah. And then I'll ask you this one. You're probably the guy that's probably best positioned to ask this, obviously, which we'll finish on, obviously, what your new venture is and where you're going with that. Who's the one to watch? Who have we got in the local ranks that you feel will genuinely make it? Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, we were on about this the other day, actually, that James, Tom and Jack have all gone back to Boston, which will be a definite thing to look forward to.
Yeah.
It'll be good to see sort of how they've sort of come on leaps and bounds, really. But yeah, all the talk is definitely around sort of James, especially the extra couple of yards he put on last year, and his temperament just seems to have a good steel about him, but at the same time, equally just a nice young gentleman as well, so that's always good.
Yeah, I think Marlon's still got a lot of similarities with Norton Ailes. I mean, we used to get on great when I was at Norton Ailes. We got on brilliant with Marlon, and when I went Marlon, we got on great with Norton Ailes, and definitely similarities. You know, we're a little bit outsiders, I suppose, in a way. And again, I kind of like that a bit, or a lot, probably. I'm really pleased that Tom, James and Jack are going back, and generally can't wish we more luck, really, Dallas than tracking club.
No, good. It's kind of, I'd say it's one of those things where you just want, it's nice to have homegrown talent back. It's one of those things you spend all your time and effort bringing them on and developing them, and it's nice to see people going back and supporting the local clubs, really, which is great to see. So we touched on, obviously, your own clients there. Obviously, you got the new venture, Vitae Sports, is it? Have I said that right?
Vitae Sports.
And how is things going from now? Is the transition been here? All good? Any clients that you're looking to tout out to the local clubs? Yeah, saw that earlier, very good.
And we've done quite a bit. We've got guys in the Big Bash, the likes of Sandy Glamachani, Pat Brown from Worcester, he's given the Bangladesh one. So, yeah, so far so good. In terms of locally, don't really get heavily involved in it, to be honest, Simon. It's generally been more trouble than it's worth, I think, what it's done yet. The bits and bobs we've done, when specific players have said they'd,
Yeah.
He's like, could you fix me something up for Saturday?
apologies for the interruption there. We had a bit of a technical issue. And that wraps up today's podcast. And thank you very much for tuning in. Please, please, please make sure that you like what you're hearing, that you're liking, sharing, spread the love. If you heard somebody mentioned with praise or grumble in there, by all means, please tag them in the post. It would mean so, so much. Try and spread what it is that we're trying to do. Thank you very much for tuning in, and tune in next week for the next podcast. And thank you very much again to special guest Darren Long. Thank you.